Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to another episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I know I say this a lot, you guys. I'm so excited for this episode. I have been advocating in the Lyme community for over 10 years. Lyme has been part of my life for almost 20 years. And, you know, I started this podcast many years ago, and it's just one of the ways I can give back to the community to, one, most importantly, give hope and inspiration to those that are still battling. It's a tough journey. It's an isolating journey, and we are oftentimes just so confused on how to even navigate through it. And so those are things that I help with people every day, and it truly is what fills my soul to be able to give back in that capacity. And so one of the things I oftentimes struggle with is, what do the listeners want to hear? Do they want to just hear stories of hope? Do they want the details about specific treatments that my guests have gone through? Not that one treatment works for everyone, right? We all know that. But do they want me to dive deeper into treatment options, herxing, detoxing, pricing of things that they've done? Like, where do we want to go with this? And so I don't know unless you listeners share with me. So I encourage you to please reach out to me on Facebook, Facebook Messenger, my Facebook page, Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, or email me, lymeandbeyondwithtanya@gmail.com. Please, please, please share. Tell me what you want to hear, because I do this for you guys. And so I want to make sure I'm bringing the best information that is going to bring the most value to you guys. So with that being said, my mind is constantly spinning on what I can do. How do I get my voice heard? How do I get this podcast shared just to spread more awareness and help more people? And a couple of weeks ago, a topic got on my radar. And so, of course, you know, I'm going to run with it. And the topic is Morgellons. Many people may not have even heard of it. I've heard of it. I hear a lot about it in the last few years, but I honestly don't know anything about it. And that was my whole problem with my Lyme journey, is that I got the bullseye rash, but I was uneducated. I did not know that that meant I'm infected with Lyme. I had no idea. And so I want to be educated on Morgellons. Again, I don't know anything about it. So once it got on my radar a few weeks ago, I've been online searching for who's going to be the best person to share all about this disease. And I found this incredible gentleman by the name of Jeremy, and he pretty much does in the Morgellons community what I do in the Lyme community. It's all about spreading awareness, right? It's so, so important to educate ourselves. And so, again, that's why I'm so excited about this episode, because I'm going to learn right along with you guys. It's an important topic. We need to talk about it. I have a feeling there's probably a lot of missing pieces that doctors and, you know, all these scientists don't know, kind of a lot like Lyme disease. But nonetheless, I'm ready to dive into it and get all the details. So thank you so much, Jeremy, for joining me. And I'm really looking forward to just you educating me and the listeners on another facet of part of Lyme disease, right? That's why my podcast is called Lyme and Beyond. It's not just Lyme. It's all things from vector-borne illnesses. It's kind of like this umbrella. And this is one of the things that fall under it. But so many people don't know about it. And luckily, I don't think so many people battle with it like they do with Lyme disease. So I definitely know not everybody with Lyme gets this, but I am now understanding that you only get it if you do have Lyme. So anyways, Jeremy, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you. Can you just kind of start with where your journey started, right? Like, let's kind of start with the whole Lyme journey or how you got sick. And then I really want to do kind of that deep dive into the Morgellons part of it.
Yeah, you got it. Tommy, thank you for inviting me to be on your show, Lyman Beyond. This is huge. This is I'm proud to be on your show. I've been listening to you for a long time now, and I'm glad to finally be here, like for real.
That makes me happy. Makes me so happy. I appreciate that. We just want to spread awareness, just like you. And I know that you have that passion in you. And so it's really fun to meet like-minded people that just want to give back to the community to help, because it's, you know, life is tough enough. And then when you deal with a chronic illness, I mean, you know, sometimes our life just crumbles apart, or so it feels like it does, and it doesn't need to. And that's why we want to be able to bring awareness and educate you guys on these, you know, very hot topics, these very hot epidemics, so to say. And so I'm super happy to hear to have you here, and I'm super happy to hear that you've been a fan of my podcast. I appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Tommy, you asked me where my Morgellons journey started. Is that right?
Lyme journey, or wherever it was, what did it start with the Morgellons, or did it start with the Lyme, or kind of a combination? So it's your story, so you kind of start wherever you want to.
And you know, people in our community particularly, Lyme isn't the only thing they've been going through, and oftentimes the severity of the presentation may depend on how much they had been going through, and that may actually be a part of that presentation. You know, with me, I guess we could start in 2012, you know, I was going through a breakup, and I had the worst presentation on my body ever, my arms, my legs, my back. It was all covered in sores, big, open, oozing, gaping lesions. And the thing about these sores that people don't particularly understand is that they feel like splinters. They feel like splinters drilling down into your skin. And when they hit a nerve, you can feel it in other parts of your body. It hurts. It just hurts a lot. And what we've been able to determine is that in Morgellons patients, the hair follicles will fill up with junk collagen. We call those follicular casts. They're casts of the hair follicle made with collagen. People can often confuse those for worms. They may look down at a sore in their skin and see a bunch of white specks poking out. They may extract those, and it might look like a worm or a shrimp, you know, maybe a maggot. I've heard that. But scientists looked at those artifacts, and they determined that they were comprised of keratin and collagen. Oftentimes, they have a hardened keratinized shell, and inside it's just soft, mushy collagen. So they're part of the body, they're part of the process. The current theory is that Lyme disease, and there are other bacteria infections like Lyme disease that are spirochetal as well, increases the amount of collagen production in the cells that it infects. One study found that tick-borne relapsing fever, which is also a Borrelia bacteria like Lyme disease, increases the collagen production in those epithelial cells by a magnitude greater than Lyme disease. And that study only looked at those two bacteria. It didn't look at any of the other species or strains of Lyme disease, or Borrelia, that are out there. And so I tried to do the right thing. I had sores before that point, before 2012. I had the artifacts coming out of my skin. But I always try to go to a doctor to get it addressed. And nobody I saw ever felt like I was making it up for attention. To that point, I had gotten antibiotics over and over and over and over again. Because every time I went to see a doctor, it was always antibiotics and steroids. That's right. And so I didn't realize until I was in contact with people at the Charles Holman Foundation, Sonny Gwen Simmons particularly, and Cindy Casey spoke with me directly, and I volunteered for them in the past. What Sonny did was she sent me copies of the conference DVDs. This couple of years later, I paid her back for that. I bought those discs. But because what they did was they educated me about something which I didn't know why it was occurring. And because I had been participating in Facebook after withdrawing from society, I got a lot of bad ideas about what it could be. I thought maybe potentially it was a vaccine that with a chicken embryo in it that was turning me into, you know, I didn't know. I thought maybe it was the chemtrails because, you know, back when Obama was president, that was a problem for a while. Well, not really a problem. I'm kind of pro-chemtrail, to be honest with you. I think we do need some solar radiation management. I just think it needs to be managed and open in the public. That's all. But one thing's for sure, chemtrails don't cause Morgellons. They don't. And once you understand that, and once you are freed from a mental shackle, then you can go back outside again. You can enjoy life. You can appreciate the chemtrails. I thought Donald Trump was going to make a red, white, and blue, but that hasn't happened yet. So, Sunny helped me understand what Morgellons really is, and not the thousands of things I heard about it that I didn't know how to differentiate. My doctor, Cornish, she was able to unshackle my mind so that I could understand what had been going on. And I could start to plan ahead for the future. Because before then, I was on autopilot. I kept going to the doctors and they kept giving me steroids and antibiotics until 2012. And I went into the ER and they brought a dermatologist in. And the first time ever, he sat in front of me and he said, "Now, Mr. Mercury, you know you're doing this to yourself." And I was wondering, had he not looked at the medical record, you know, if I was doing this to myself, why were doctors constantly fooled by that? It felt like I had a real infection. So I just got up and walked out. I discharged myself. And I didn't really understand why that dermatologist had said that. My girlfriend at the time, her friend, had said something under her breath about being delusional. I didn't understand what she meant by that. It really confused me. My girlfriend disagreed, but it wasn't until I learned about the CDC study in 2012 that that's what people were taking seriously. And honestly, it wasn't the study, because the study's not that bad. I don't think the CDC is bad at all, or evil. The media ran away with the story. They're the ones that said Morgellons patients are crazy. That's what forms most people's opinion. Most people haven't even read that study, so they don't know what's in it. And a lot of the people who like to educate others about what's in it get really liberal with their interpretations. I've heard some people suggest that there were no Morgellons patients in that study. And I know that's not true because there are pictures in there. The problem is people don't, they're not scientists. You know, they go to the news to get the conclusion, the reporting on, you know, what did the scientists figure out? They're not going to go through those papers and then go through each of the sources, you know, and really gain a deep understanding of what that research is demonstrating. And so in 2017, when I finally got my mind on track, I got my head screwed on straight, things were working out good, that's when I went back to school and I took bacteria and chronic infections from the University of Copenhagen in Denmark online. I didn't fly out there or anything. That would be cool though. But no, and that course is hosted at the Costerton Biofilm Center. Do you know Dr. Bill Costerton?
I do not.
Dr. Bill Costerton was the father of biofilms. He was the man that really established our current understanding that these are an actual phenomenon and also that they're the natural mode of life for these microbial species.
Interesting.
And what I learned is that various species of bacteria communicate with each other and they build habitats inside our bodies. And those are called biofilms. You see them on your teeth. If you've ever had a cavity from gingivitis or periodontal disease, That's a bacterial species inside your mouth, eating away at your teeth. And if you're swallowing those and they're getting inside your body, they could be living straight into your liver and your bone marrow, your kidneys. They create habitats, and we can't open the body up, scrub it out, and get rid of those things. We can't even measure them right now. What that tells you, this one thing about biofilms people don't understand, these microbes build channels inside their habitats. They're called efflux pumps. And their express purpose is to route antibiotics through and away from the colony. They have separate channels for nutrients, fresh nutrients and water coming in. So they make sure everybody in there is fed and hydrated. But those antibiotics is called the efflux pump. Scientists have observed this. Biofilms, they look at those antibiotics coming through the bloodstream, and I'm like, open the efflux pumps, get those out of here. Right to the liver. And that's why people, one of the reasons why people in the late stages of these infections don't get well. One of the reasons why people like us bounce back and forth from doctor to doctor to doctor to doctor isn't because we're seeking antibiotics and steroids. It's because there's not a national strategy for this disease. There used to be when it was called syphilis. But people don't want to talk about syphilis because they get a negative connotation about it. I'm walking around town with open, oozing, bleeding sores all over my body after experiencing a bullseye rash. Now, Lyme disease wasn't discovered until the 1980s. And so oftentimes when scientists were looking at that germ under the microscope, they might have been looking at Lyme disease because it's the same kind of germ. They look similar under the microscope, and we didn't have molecular diagnostics until the 1940s. One thing we know about Lyme disease and syphilis is that they both build biofilms and that they both turn into round body forms when exposed to penicillin. And both of those germs revert back to spiral form after the penicillin is gone. So if you want to know Lyme disease, really look into what people were saying about syphilis 100 years ago. Back before they thought, and it was prevalent, that penicillin would cure it. Penicillin doesn't cure Lyme disease. Maybe in the very initial, 2 to 3 weeks, I don't know. They're starting to prescribe doxycycline as a day before and potentially a day after pill to prevent syphilis transmission. Because we have a syphilis epidemic in this country right now. And people just don't want to talk about it because of the stigma. People feel more comfortable talking about Lyme disease, but they don't really understand that it's the same kind of bacteria as syphilis. It can result in people running around town with sores all over their body. And a dose of antibiotics and a steroid is not going to knock it out. You got to have a national strategy. You got to get people like Ebony Cornish up front and center going, hey, this is the success I've had with my patients. And then try that on some volunteers who want to try that out. You know, we've got to move the needle forward. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is by addressing things honestly. You know, Lyme disease isn't some, magical, shapeless thing without context. It's a spiral-shaped bacteria that can cause sores on your face. And people just don't understand that. They'll call you crazy.
Sorry, I'm going to stop you right there. So one, I did not know Morgellons was, it had sores like that, that are, I guess I could assume that whatever it was painful. But my understanding was just, it looked like fibrous or worms or something was coming out of your skin. Again, that's why I'm excited about this episode, because I need to be educated. So when you just mentioned that, Lyme disease And yes, that corkscrew little spirochete looks exactly like syphilis. In fact, funny little story. I had somebody share on one of the Facebook groups fairly recently that she had been telling her friend for quite some time that she had Lyme disease. And her friend, of course, thought she was crazy. And her friend went to the Red Cross to do a blood donation. And the Red Cross contacted the donor and said, "I'm sorry, you can't donate blood. You have syphilis."
Yep.
Come to find out, she had Lyme disease. Anyways, thought it was really kind of a little fun fact to share there. So when you say somebody has Lyme disease and then they get sores, so are you saying the sores are the Mergellans, right? Like, because just anybody that has just Lyme disease, I don't know of anybody that has any type of sore, so to say. So can you kind of elaborate on that or explain and clarify that?
Sure. A variety of skin conditions have actually been associated with Lyme disease. Basal cell carcinoma, for example. There's one I was just thinking about where the skin turns purple. You know what I'm talking about. It's like purple splotches on the arms. Can't recall the name of it right now. So the one thing, though, that you had mentioned about the Red Cross, however, a positive Lyme test can give a false positive in light of syphilis, but syphilis is not well known to give a false positive in light of Lyme disease. And that's something people really need to understand. It doesn't matter if you have Lyme disease or syphilis. There's a lot of evidence that Lyme disease is sexually transmissible. Now, here's the question you asked me about the prevalence. No, it's about 6% of patients develop Mergellans. Not everybody with sores has the characteristic lesions. To characterize them, you have to use a microscope. It's 50 to 60 times or greater. Because Mergellans fibers are microscopic otherwise. You can't see them with the naked eye.
Yeah.
Okay. For diagnostic purposes, for characterization, the fibers have to be embedded inside skin tissue. I'm going to send you, well, I sent you my link, the Mergellans.io. Is it okay? Can I mention it?
Absolutely.
That's our nonprofit here in South Carolina. We're the new Mergellans movement, and we do an educational course, but there's a link there for pictures. And the criteria that we expect for Mergellans photos are, one, they have to be magnified 60 times or greater, and two, they have to show fibers embedded in skin tissue. It has to be clear that they're not resting on top of it. You have to see the gleam from the tissue over the fiber that demonstrates either that grew there or somebody took a needle and injected a bunch of fibers into their skin. There has been a Mergellans patient, a prominent Mergellans patient in the community who was accused of doing just that by their doctor. So, yeah, there are facts about Mergellans, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there. 6% based on a cohort, two cohorts, one of 1,000 and another of 500, determined that in each 6% of Lyme disease patients exhibited the Mergellans condition. The biggest thing about Lyme disease and syphilis and infections like it is that they are imitator class diseases, meaning how they present is going to vary based on age and genetics, potentially even the kind of craziness someone's gone through in their life, the stress. That's going to determine how Lyme disease presents in that person. Somebody may get arthritis in their knee. Somebody may develop a Bell's palsy. Somebody may develop a bunch of open, oozing, bleeding sores all over the body and a bunch of worm-looking things coming out of them. The worm-looking things are not microscopic. Mergellans patients develop a variety of artifacts inside their skin. You may have heard about the black specks. Those are actually tightly wound bundles of fibers. They're so small, though, you would need a scanning electron microscope to characterize them. You know, these are facts that you don't hear about in groups, you know, because everybody's presenting what they want it to be about. You know, they want it to be about getting revenge on the CDC. You know, they want it to be about the chemtrails. You know, whatever their pet theory is, that's what they want it to be about. They don't want to embrace facts, and that's why misinformation is prevalent. When people are faced with the facts of my skin condition, most often they try to dispute them. You know, they don't want to hear that you have to use a microscope, that what they're showing when they're holding up one of the hairs off the top of their head and they're saying, look, it's floating around in the camera. That's not a Morgellons fiber. It's not inside the skin. And you don't need a 60 times microscope to see it. They don't want to hear that because they're getting attention for being on YouTube showing people these, you know, our fallouts from the chemtrails. And that gets them thousands of views, you know, and a lot of subscribers. I love my subscribers. I mean, they got me where I'm at today. But, you know, compared to other channels out there that talk about Morgellons, we're a tight-knit audience. And that's just, there's not a market out there for the truth. And that's really what it comes down to.
There's so much misinformation. You know, you mentioned these social media groups, specifically Facebook, because that's where a lot of these groups are. And, you know, they really are fabulous groups for support. They are, because Lyme and all the stuff, like I mentioned earlier, it's truly like an isolating disease, whether you have the support around you or not. And it's so much easier to feel validated from people that are going through what you're going through, right? And so we find that hope and that support in these groups. But yeah, I absolutely want to just highlight what you mentioned, is that there truly is so much misinformation that is being spread out there within these groups. And I'd like to think it's just because they don't know, right? They don't know. And, you know, there's even a lot of, there's just a lot of groups out there. You know, I know that I have my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya group that is kind of a conglomeration of a whole bunch of things. And then I have Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. That is my Facebook group dedicated specifically to Lyme stuff. And I do monitor it very closely because I don't want people sharing misinformation. So if somebody is sharing something, please feel free. I'm also not a group that bans people from posting their thoughts or their beliefs like some other groups are, but you have to back it up. You have to back it up, right? You have to validate where you're getting this information from, or you share it and then you have people chime in saying, no, have you not heard this, right? And then kind of speak out the truth of it. And so it's a kind of a love-hate relationship with a lot of these Facebook groups, and they definitely can be overwhelming. And what I always say to especially those that are kind of new to these journeys is that find one or two that you like, that resonates with you, that you feel comfortable in, and stick with that. Don't go and join all the groups, right? It's so overwhelming. And we have Lyme disease, but we don't want Lyme disease to have us, right? And when you consume your thoughts, your mind within these millions of groups that you're on, it's so overwhelming, right? And it's really hard to keep that positive mindset about where you are in your journey and how you're going to get well. And so thank you for mentioning that, because yes, it is really sad. I really wish I could just have like this copy paste thing that says not true, not true, not true, right? but it is hard. It is hard. And I know that a lot of these people, they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart because they are misinformed, right?
Yeah.
But that does not mean I know it all about Lyme. Trust me, there's so much I don't know. But I do know that when I share information, I know that it's true information, right? But I still learn about Lyme every day. I learn new things that I didn't know before. So just a little cautionary tale right there.
Oh, well, you're so right. And what happens is people, after withdrawing from society, they go back online just to get some kind of connection with other humans. And really, for them, it's not even about the information, it's the participation. They like being able to participate with another human being again, you know, and they felt so neglected for so long. That's really what matters to them. So I run a few groups on Facebook. For our Magellan's group, we have writing down the rules can be beneficial for everybody in every situation. That can cut out a lot of craziness up front. And so all we do is we just enforce the rules. And we don't kick anybody out. If they want to leave, they're free to do so. I'm not kicking anybody out if they're asking me to. They can forget that nonsense. But our rules are pretty simple. You know, our pictures have a criterion. 60 times or greater, fibers in the skin. The only medical advice we offer in this group is to see a Lyme disease doctor. That's it. Anything else gets kicked out. And, you know, we've tried very hard to be sensitive to people's feelings because Lyme disease is an isolating disease, especially when you have sores all over your face.
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine that, you know, because part of the problem that I know I dealt with personally, and I'm sure a lot of people out there can relate, is that the outside of us, our shell looks just perfect, right? The picture of good health when the inside of us is just on fire and flaring and in pain and all the stuff. And for you guys with Morgellons that have these visual sores, right? Like, I can't even imagine what that's like because for sure you would isolate yourself inside, right? Like, I mean, a little bit or a lot of us are, you know, kind of vain. We have a black eye or a big zit on your face or whatever it is, and you kind of hibernate in the house, right? Like we are kind of a little vain that way, and it's understandable. But when you are living with this, like isolation is the worst thing that we can do, right? And so how do you get outside of that? How do you, I can't even imagine.
But to get to that point, you really have to start seeing a Lyme disease specialist or a doctor who understands chronic bacterial infections, maybe late stage infections, functional medicine doctors. There's options out there. But yeah, the saddest thing is that people with sores on their body, they get reactions from people. You know, I had another girlfriend a long time ago, and, you know, I took my shirt off and she saw the sore and she got really grossed out. That was it for, you know, just.
And probably a lot of it is fear, right? Yeah. A lot of things are fear that when we can visually see something, I'm like, oh, you know, yeah, no, you can't borrow my lip gloss or you can't borrow my lotion, right? Because we don't know. And I don't know, is Morgellons transferable that way? Maybe that's my next question I want to ask.
Well, you know, we had talked about you don't have Morgellons unless you have Lyme, and that's not necessarily the case. It's not unreasonable to hypothesize that Morgellons could develop in syphilis patients. It's the spirochetal bacteria and the kind of effect that it has on the skin tissues. We really need to do studies to determine if it's not possible. I'm going to tell you right now, the gold standard test for syphilis is not reliable. I just posted a case study of a 43-year-old woman whose heart exploded after she had two negative antenatal screens. So they had to go back and tell her kids and her husband that, hey, your wife, we didn't know because the tests were all negative. And they did a barrage of tests. PCR can be negative for that infection. And so that makes it hard to really rule it out in everybody, especially when it gets into the late stage. But everything I'm telling you right now is also true of Borrelia. And your audience knows this already. So at the point where, you know, you get to where you don't want to freak people out by being around them. Yeah, that was something that I was concerned about. I had a friend who invited me over to work out. And after they saw my skin, you know, they had to wipe down the dumbbell bench. And that was it after one set. We didn't do another set of the, we did. We worked out a little bit more. That was a long time ago. But look, it's all about finding the right kind of doctor and getting on that healing journey. That's how you get back, you know, to where you want to be in society. Besides the Lyme disease specialist, it was the CBD taking cannabidiol oil every single day, that really helped keep me level, keep my mood straight. My doctor recommends things like specific kinds of fish oil that have been very beneficial in maintaining my mood. You know, there's no cure for chronic Lyme disease. Like we talked about earlier, you can't just pry the body open and scrape out all the biofilms. And until a cure comes along, you just got to do what you can do. And if that's, you know, a combination of antibiotics over an extended duration, as long as, you know, your doctor's monitoring you, that's the safe way to do that. You know, because as soon as the lab test comes back and she looks at it and goes, okay, Jeremy, we got to change direction on this. You know, do what your doctor tells you to do. A lot of people I know go through so much hell and lose so much money and time on debunked cures. Morgellons is not associated with mold or parasites. That's been established in the literature. It's not associated with nematodes. It's not associated with insects. Some patients may be dealing with that as well at the same time as Morgellons. But Morgellons is associated with Lyme disease, and it's a skin condition with the fibers are actually malformed hairs. There's nothing special about them either. It's just evidence of the tissue damage by the Borrelia bacteria. So getting on that healing journey, that's, you just got to find a compatible doctor. I know a lot of people don't want to take that leap of faith working outside of insurance. Like I said, my doctor visits are extremely reasonable. You know, she does less than $300 a visit. I visit with her 3 or 4 times a year, and that allows me to stay self-employed, you know, to keep my clients happy and to do the things that I love to do, you know, like disc golf, things I can afford to do, of course. But it's allowed me to see that I can have aspirations beyond what I was capable of comprehending previously. I just didn't think I was capable of a lot of things that, you know, the Lord has led me to experience.
Yeah, that's, I want to touch on a lot of things that you just brought up there. Yes, one thing is, it's hard and it's scary. And, you know, I always want to impress on those that Lyme is not a cheap journey, right? But it also doesn't have to financially ruin you. I think where a lot of people make mistakes, of course, these are my opinions, right? My show, I can have my opinions, is that they have a really hard time thinking outside that traditional Western medicine box.
Yeah.
We were raised around Western medicine. Most of us were, right? I'm jealous of those that I've met along my journey that their parents didn't take them to traditional doctors. Their parents didn't give them antibiotics, right? And there's no judgment on the parents. Like, that's just what we think we're supposed to do. And I'm not saying that it's always the wrong thing to do. It's just oftentimes people have to be open to something that they're not familiar with, right? Like, do the uncomfortable in order to get well and get the results that you need. And unfortunately, when you do that, you are going outside the traditional insurance realm and therefore paying out of pocket for these doctors. And I love that your doctor doesn't overcharge you. I've had people reach out to me and say, my doctor charges me $600 a visit. You know, again, if you're out there, you're struggling to find a doctor, somebody in your area that can help you, that is affordable, please reach out. Like, that is what I'm happy to help you with. I don't have any doctors that I endorse, right? Like, it's just simply word of mouth or results that I've heard from different doctors. Or sometimes I may not know of somebody in your area, but I can find them. You go check them out, right? And then if you feel they're great, then it's somebody I can refer to the next person. But we have to resonate with our own doctor. And yes, but please, please, please don't spend a fortune. Don't let these doctors gaslight you into thinking that this is the only way and this is what you need to do to get well. Sadly, all the gaslighting doesn't just go on in the traditional Western medicine field. I've seen it go on within the Lyme community as well. So just because they're an LLMD does not mean you just go in blindly, right? you have to be your own advocate and you have to resonate with these doctors. And so just don't be gaslit. I mean, I did it for 7 years, right? And it's not okay. So there was that little spiel on that. And then I want to talk about, you had mentioned that there's no cure for Lyme, right? So I just want to kind of share my thoughts on this. You can talk to different doctors. One will say, oh, absolutely, we can cure you, right? We can talk to other doctors. No, it goes in remission, kind of like cancer. And so, right or wrong, who knows, right? Excuse me. My personal thoughts on it, first of all, call it what you want. If you're in remission and you're symptom-free, you be cured. If that's what you want to do, go for it. I love it, right? All the positive mindset thoughts. My personal beliefs is that there will always be some form of spirochetes floating in your body behind these biofilms, right? And if you don't keep a strong foundation, anything can trigger them and bring out your Lyme, and then you're no longer in remission. That's my belief on it. But again, if I liked that word cure, I could say cure. Sure. You do you, right? Whatever makes you happy, whatever you want to call it, because I know that there's a lot of back and forth in these groups about whether you can cure it or if it goes in remission. Does it really matter? If we're symptom free and we have our life back, call it what you want. I don't care. I know that I've been healthy for over 4 years. I'm so grateful for it. Am I in remission? Am I cured? I don't care. All I know is that Lyme is not, well, Lyme is in my daily life, but it's with others, right? Not my own personal life. Do I deal with Lyme? And so it's an amazing feeling. But with that being said, so Lyme goes into remission, right? Or we become symptom-free, or we get cured, or whatever we want to call it. What does that look like as far as Morgellons? So you say that you have these sores, right? Do you always have sores? Do they hide and go away and you still have other symptoms from it? Do they, I don't know, educate us.
Sure thing. Now, actually, you had said something that I was interested in. You said the spirochetes behind the biofilms there. I was wondering if you could clarify on.
Well, I believe that my thoughts are, okay, so I am a big believer in muscle testing. Okay. That is, I think that if people want to do the blood work to get that confirmation that they have Lyme or to get the confirmation if they're in remission or not, a lot of people do blood work. And of course, I'm going to shout them out again. I trust three labs. I trust Igenics in Palo Alto, California, Armin Labs in Germany, and Galaxy Diagnostics. Those are the ones that I personally trust, okay? But once I got to dive into my Lyme journey, once I got my diagnosis, I got introduced to kinesiology, muscle testing. And if you've listened to my show for any amount of time, you know that I'm very much of a fan of that. And so when we go to get muscle tested, one of the beauties of it, I think, is it's almost like getting a progress report from school, right? We're halfway through that quarter or semester or however they do it. How are you doing, right? And I think that that's the way I look at having muscle testing done, because they'll say, okay, I'm barely picking up Borrelia, or whoa, Bartonella's really high, or mold, or right, all of this stuff. So they're always picking something up, and you can modify your protocol based on that. That doesn't mean the money you just spent on these supplements that you're going to quit now doesn't mean they won't be brought back in, right? So don't feel defeated with that. Don't get rid of your supplements yet. But I just think it's a great way to truly kind of stay on top of what your body is signaling is wrong with you. So with that, I can go to my naturopath and I can get muscle tested and nope, you are good, Tanya. I detect no Lyme, no co-infections, no mold. You are perfect, right? Makes sense to me because I feel perfect.
Yeah.
So my thoughts are that For example, last summer, I pulled a muscle in my shoulder blade at the gym. And of course, you know, once we get our life back, we don't want to slow down. And so instead of taking that little break, right, I just pushed through.
Oh, no.
What happened was Lyme got brought out.
Yeah.
So I went to the naturopath, not for Lyme. I went there, he tested me, he goes, I am picking up on a little bit of Lyme in your body. And of course, my head explodes. What's happening? And so I believe what happened is I pulled that muscle and Lyme was behind there. Lyme was hiding in some tissue in my shoulder blade. Right. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it wasn't healing, and also the fact that I didn't know how to stop. And so what did I do? I came home and did a couple of my protocols, upped my colloidal silver, you know, up the different things that I do to maintain.
Yeah.
So I think that the spirochetes, when they are in our tissues, in our body, and they're not detectable from being muscle tested. So where are they? Where are they hiding when we know or believe that they can come back out if we don't take care of ourselves, if we have emotional or physical trauma, or, you know, all the reasons why people get brought out of remission?
Yeah. Well, you know, the brain is a soft tissue that's particularly susceptible to Lyme disease. And like we said, we can't just crack open the skull and, you know, measure it and see if there are biofilms in there. I wanted to shout out a couple of great resources to your audience about if they'd like to understand biofilms better. There's a free online movie on YouTube right now called Why Am I Still Sick? The Silent Role of Biofilms in Chronic Disease. That's our good friend Richard Longland, who made that movie, and you will learn a lot. Dr. Alan McDonald and Dr. Eva Shapey is in that film. So if you want to know about biofilms, you'll learn about them. The other thing, I wanted to answer your question. What does remission look like for a McGowan's patient? It's what does it feel like? Because oftentimes when you're going through therapy, you may have like 3 or 4 sores on your body in different locations. You know, like right now, I've got a little over half a dozen sores, and a couple of them, 2 or 3 of them, 4 of them, they're producing those follicular casts. And so it feels like there's splinters drilling into my skin. I'll show you over here on the camera. You can see I've got this pink tape on my shoulder right there.
I do see that. Sorry, listeners. One day I'm going to get really techie and be able to provide video for these on YouTube. But in the meantime, I'm the only one who gets to see that. Thanks, Jeremy. Okay. I see that.
See, the scars going all the way down my arm. That's from years and years and years of developing those sores.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, for a McGowan's patient, it's going to feel comfortable. Okay. It's going to feel like their skin is not hurting them. And, you know, it might be because it's hard because you see the scars on my skin. That's, you know, when I'm walking down the street and somebody notices that, they're not going to notice it as easily because it's not covered in sores, open, oozing, you know, gaping sores or anything. But they'll see the scars and they'll wonder, you know, was this guy a meth addict? Was he just sitting around picking his skin all day? And they don't understand that, you know, there's these literal artifacts in the skin and they're causing a real sensation. It's not just a neuropathy. You know, Morgellons isn't in people's heads. It's in our skin. And that is where...
I like that one.
That's where the paradigms got to shift. You know, we have to have a national strategy for not just Lyme disease, but all of these infections that... You know, that's another thing I want to mention to the audience, too. The IDSA is not evil either. I don't think the CDC or the IDSA are evil. There are a lot of good infectious disease doctors out there who understand chronic Lyme disease, who understand Morgellons, and they can probably bring you back to a point of remission. Just like with any doctor, you know, you want to interview them to see if it's going to be a good match. There are some specific questions that we recommend to ask them. But I don't want anybody missing out on treatment just because they got a bad opinion about an infectious disease doctor or a dermatologist. I know some extremely good dermatologists, including the top dermatologist for psoriasis in the whole country. He's a great guy. And he sees patients with syphilis and he treats them, you know. When you think about syphilis, you're thinking about Morgellons, right? That picture of the person walking around with a bunch of open, oozing sores on their body. It just happens to be there's the most evidence that this open, oozing, bleeding sore skin condition is associated with Lyme disease.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, if I'm anything, I'm honest. And you say infectious disease doctors, and I just want to shrivel up and cringe, right? Again, I always try to not group everything and judge everybody in one category, right? There's some really good traditional medicine doctors out there. I'm sure there are some great infectious disease doctors out there. I've personally never heard of any. I've never experienced any. Those are the ones that most of the Lyme community gets gaslit by. But with that said, that doesn't mean they're not out there. We have to constantly remind ourselves that we are not crazy. It is our body. We know what we're feeling. We know what we're going through. We have to be our own advocate. If you're not resonating with your doctor for whatever reason, right or wrong, maybe it's a fabulous doctor that is so superior with Lyme, but maybe in your head you don't want to think you have Lyme. And so you're like, nope, I'm out. Whatever the reason, it doesn't matter. Only stay with the doctors that you resonate with, right? Don't let anyone tell you that you're crazy, although part of us is a little crazy in our mind because of the Lyme, right? It is affecting our brain. It is, you know, with the Bartonella, we get that rage. There's just so many things that go on inside of us with Lyme. And so anyways, okay, so just to clarify, Jeremy, you may or may not have any sores on your body at all, but still your Morgellons is active. Is that true?
Well, it's that the Lyme disease is maybe in remission, because with Morgellons, you know, as long as you got sores on your skin, then you're dealing with it, because those sores are sore. They hurt. You know, I know a lot of people with psychosis, they look at the dust in their air, and they believe that that's Morgellons fibers. They believe the breathing those in. You know, they don't have skin conditions. You know, they're not picking, but their skin's okay. That's where a lot of the misinformation comes from, is people's own subjective interpretations. And that's where we really, you know, step up the pace with the education. You know, we are quick to help people understand that no, Morgellons is not associated with mold or parasites or speed. No, those are things that people need to hear.
But, you know, and I believe that Lyme is associated, I don't even know if that's the right word, but we all have parasites. We all do. And it's like one of my favorite things to talk about. I know I like to talk about poop all the time. It's the fun conversations in Lyme, right? Nothing's off limits. Parasites are a huge problem within those that are chronically ill. Mold is a big problem for a lot of people, but not everybody gets it, right? Just like you get Lyme doesn't mean you're going to get Morgellons. And so when you said if your Lyme is in remission, does that mean Morgellons is in remission?
Well, you know, Morgellons is only a descriptive term for what Lyme could do to some people in the skin.
Okay. All right. See, sorry, listeners, if I'm redundantly asking these questions, it's because I honestly don't understand this. And that's why I'm excited to have you on here, because we need awareness. We need to be educated about this. So, all right, Jeremy, is there any last wonderful tip that you want to share? Any advice, maybe a nugget or a piece of information that has helped you along your journey?
Yeah, you know, if you're struggling and you've already got a doctor and everything, you got that figured out. Check into the CBD oil, especially if you're having a hard time staying level, maybe controlling your temper. That's something that can can particularly help CBD. It's not going to get you high. I know elderly people started taking it and they're still normal. It just feels normal. You're able to go about your business. Morgellons.io is our website. We'd love to have everybody come over, check us out, read some blog articles. Tanya, I want to have you on my podcast, the Morgellons Discussion. This was a good time, definitely. And I appreciate you having me here. This is to have a platform to speak about my skin condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's truly my honor. I appreciate you taking the time and just educating people and for what you're doing within the community. It needs people like you. So I am thankful. And just one last word. Of course, for the listeners, all the links and sites that Jeremy mentioned will be in the description of his episode, as always. But I think this is a great episode to just remind people. We're all humans, right? We all deserve love and respect. And most importantly, we all need to give ourselves grace. We are so hard on ourselves. Whether we're sick, healthy, doesn't matter. We are our worst critics. We need to give ourselves grace. But Jeremy, when you were mentioning these sores on your body, we live in a world of instant gratification, which I can't stand even saying, but we also live in a very judgmental world.
No.
And it's just a great reminder that your smile or acknowledgement to somebody out in the community could truly make or break not just their day, but their life.
Their life.
Be kind. Don't judge. Just be a good human. Jeremy, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. It's been very informative.
Yeah, I'm glad you learned something, and you're coming back on my show for sure. And hope you have a great rest of the day.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.